Hi, guys.
Hello, everybody. Welcome back to Too Niche.
This is the podcast where we pick a topic, we haul it to death, and today we're getting controversial.
I feel like we're on the verge of a true reckoning, hot on the heels of the WGA strike and the SAG strike. Sweet Bethany Frankel has thrown her POV into the mix and is calling for a unionization of all reality TV talent.
And today, a lawsuit was filed against NBC Universal and all its like child companies, like Bravo Media, E, CNBC, any assets controlled by NBC Universal. And these lawyers and the stars they are representing are coming to snatch NBC Universal's wig, alleging mistreatment, exploitation, abuse at the hands of producers or affiliates of NBC Universal.
Basically, reality TV as we know it is on its way out.
RIP.
And this perfectly aligns with the topic we had planned for quite a while. It's been on the docket. And today we are covering one season Bravo reality shows.
I have chills because I feel like this happens often on this podcast. We talk about something and it comes into the general like zeitgeist, or we like do a podcast and then later on it's like within a week or something
it's in the general zeitgeist.
I know. So I feel like we should go through this lawsuit.
Yeah, definitely.
Just to get the niches up to date on what the hell is going on.
Which we're pre-recording, so perhaps there might be some developments down the line, but here's where we are now as of this moment.
Yeah, so today we're recording on August 4th, and this lawsuit was filed yesterday, August 3rd. And the law firm representing a significant number of individuals employed by or contracted with Bravo Media, they are saying that they have reason to believe that cast members and crew members on NBC reality TV shows have been subjected to disturbing mistreatment by NBC Universal and its employees, contractors, and third-party affiliate. This includes, but is not limited to, deliberate attempts to manufacture mental instability by plying cast members with alcohol while depriving them of food and sleep.
Classic.
Denying mental health treatment to cast members displaying obvious and alarming signs of mental deterioration.
Kelly Ben Simone.
Exploiting minors for uncompensated and sometimes long-term appearances on NBC reality shows.
Every child of housewife ever.
Distributing and or condoning the distribution of non-consensual pornography.
Raquel.
Covering up acts of sexual violence. Refusing to allow cast members the freedom to leave their own shows, even under dire circumstances.
LVPBH.
Raquel.
That too.
No doubt Bravo will.
Erica Jane, probably.
Oh, true, true. This lawsuit says, no doubt Bravo will aver that the cast members and crew members assume these risks contractually, but the law does not countenance waiver of intentional misconduct or gross negligence. They say they are telling Bravo that they have to secure all documents and communications related to pretty much anything to do with like any cast members' mental health, physical health, alcohol consumptions, sleep, rest, meal breaks. Basically, they're about to get a load of documents where they discover that no one, including yours truly, has any regards for the human rights of reality TV stars.
You don't say.
I'm conflicted about this lawsuit because I do believe that people deserve basic respect. I don't believe that great reality TV, or at least the genre that I gravitate towards and have built like an entire career on, I don't think that's made by people who are mentally well. I think the best reality TV is by casting really unstable people.
Well, I think at this point, sorry, but I think you have to be unstable to want to be on reality TV at this point.
Yeah.
Like, we've all seen, like, case in point, like a Teresa Giudice moment. And it's like, what could go wrong? Everything.
Yeah, I think that there's always been a correlation between, like, oh, you're dying to be on a reality TV show because you're unwell. And you're also, like, desperate to be on TV. So the two of those things combined make for, like, a chef's kiss.
Shitty contract.
Yeah, and a really shitty contract because you're basically saying, like, I don't have the chops, the talent, or the connections to get cast on a TV show, a movie, or anything. And this is, like, a faster track to getting, like, the stardom and attention that I seek.
Mm-hmm.
But I do think with this, like, the tides are turning, and they have been for a while. Like, I feel like I think it kind of started with documentaries that were executive produced by the people who are in them. Like, I'm thinking of the Katy Perry one, the Justin Bieber one. That to me was always weird because I grew up, like, on, like, the Madonna documentary.
Truth or Dare.
Truth or Dare.
The best tour documentary of all time.
Where you're like, this Fight is me. Raw. Like, this is exposing kind of a side of this person that we wouldn't normally see, that they normally wouldn't want us to see. But that's, like, to me, a really good documentary is, like, it exposes something, or, like, you get intel, or they tell you a secret. And these other ones that I would watch, I'd be like, this was just a propaganda film. Like, we're not going to see anything that these people don't want us to see because they're in control. And I feel like the shift is moving more towards a type of reality television that is just executive produced by someone who already is a star and has that leverage via, I don't know, their social media platform or just, like, their general infamy. And we're going to be moving away from any sort of, like, content about psychos. And that's really sad.
It's a shame for us. So Jill Zarin and Bethany got me to the Bethany podcast world.
Mm-hmm. So it was only a matter of time before you got sucked in.
I would hate listen now and then, but then it was like Bethany rants, or like just like a 12-minute Bethany, like, going off about something, and it was truly tough to listen to. So I thought my days of a Bethany podcast were over, but then she brings in Jill Zarin and curiosity got the best of me. And it ended up being like a 3-part series, and I listened to all of it. And from there, that's probably for another haul because I have a lot to say about that whole experience of listening to that. But it then sort of like looped into another episode where Bethany began talking about why she thinks that reality TV talent needs a union. And she's not wrong.
No.
I think the industry feeds on their craving to be on television. So there's that. And then they're able to take advantage of them because a lot of these people don't really have a leg to stand on in terms of, like, notoriety or other businesses. So that is sort of a recipe to underpay somebody and overwork them.
Mm-hmm.
And she had Caitlin Bristow on, who was a bachelorette. And she had asked Caitlin how much she was paid her first season as a bachelorette. And Caitlin said that she was offered $60,000. Bachelors are paid $120,000. She hired an entertainment lawyer she was the first bachelorette to ever try to get paid as much as the male bachelors. And she was able to talk it up to $100,000.
That is insane to me in the world of reality TV specifically, because I think of that as being like a more female centric, like, women are the stars of reality TV to me. So I would think that it would be a situation where it's the opposite.
Me too. Now, I'm
don't understand how that happens? Like, who is deciding those rules? Because it does actually seem like very arbitrary that like they're like, oh, like it's almost comical where you're like, you just think things are one way and then you realize, wow, like men just get everything.
It's wild. And it was so interesting to hear her be so transparent about those numbers. And obviously, Bethany will tell anybody who's listening that she was paid $7,000 for her first season of Roni. And people are still watching that. Like, I'll turn it on just, you know, if I want to feel something, like at any time. So the fact that obviously, it's really the same conversation that WGA and SAG are having, that all of a sudden, like, it's not just airing for one season and then playing in reruns on the network. Like, it's streaming. Like, people are consuming it endlessly. So there needs to be a conversation around what that looks like.
I do believe that there should be some sort of back-end compensation for everyone involved in a reality TV show, even if it's like a tiny amount. Like, it isn't right. It's not right. It's, and I think mostly right now, I think of Kristen Doty, where I'm like your reputation was like fully destroyed by this show. But also season two of Vanderpump Rules is like one of the best seasons of reality TV of all time. And she should be getting paid every time someone goes back to watch the season where Stassi backhanded her in the face.
Think about how many people found Vanderpump Rules or rewatched Vanderpump Rules in this year alone.
I know.
And they see nothing of that.
I just had a thought too, which is like, with all the talk about like Web3 and blockchain technology, like that's something that probably will have to be woven into these shows and like the contracts involved in entertainment properties from here on out, where it's just like written into the coding DNA of a show that keeps track of like every time someone streams it, every time someone watches it on Peacock, YouTube, blah, blah, blah. And then like it all trickles down into the person, everyone's wallets. Like that's like a really good usage of blockchain technology, mm-hmm. and probably like where the future of entertainment should and will be going.
I think the issue right now is the tech is bigger than what people can anticipate. So it's hard to really say like what, I think it's hard to have the foresight of like really where things are going right now. I mean, we can tell, obviously AI is going to be huge and blockchain and all of these things. And obviously everybody has moved to like a streaming or even a TikTok. I'd rather sit and watch TikTok than TV at most times at this point, which mm-hmm. is a whole other conversation. But I don't know. It's just different, which is why I think let's celebrate yesteryear and the excellent programs that whose lives, many lives were cut short. And it's also really hard to find a lot of what we're hauling today. A lot of it's been pulled off the streamers, which has been really heartbreaking.
It's a special kind of darkness, the one season wonders, because it goes a step and a grade below even like the guilty pleasure reality TV shows. It's like something like Vanderpump Rules is great because we all agree, or people who are sane agree, that like this is like such a dark world. It's rich with like this various cast of characters. Like it's horrific, but it's also entertaining. And then you have the one season shows, which were either so boring they neither were here nor there, or it's like this is actually so sick and wrong and exploitative, like it cannot go on for another season. Like it's too dark to last. And that is really a great
sweet spot.
It's such a sweet spot.
I've always felt like reality TV is sort of like porn. Like once you do it, you've done it. You're a porn star. You're a reality star. Like it's always fascinating to me, these one season shows and like how they may or may not have just like shifted the person's trajectory and to be like unemployable or just really sort of like,
yeah,
switched the course, because once you've gone reality TV, it's hard to go back.
I would even argue that reality TV stars are more stigmatized now than porn stars are.
Absolutely.
Like, it's actually like very chic to be a porn star, and then you have like huge pivots available to you, and like you have a lot of street cred.
Yeah, reality TV limited.
Which is really fucked up.
Which is why they need a union.
I know, but like, I don't know if the union would protect from the stigmatization of being like a reality TV star.
Yeah, no, that's hard.
I think because it's like in porn, even, I mean, in a lot of times in porn, like you hear stories afterwards of people feeling like they didn't have agency. But I think in porn, as a viewer, you're oftentimes viewing someone who's in control of whatever it is they're portraying. And in reality TV, you're viewing someone who thinks they're in control and like they think they have a handle on whatever it is they're portraying. But what they don't understand is that they, whatever they're doing, is coming off like the complete opposite way. And they're kind of exposed as having this like lack of self-awareness, and they are being like publicly humiliated.
And they sign it all away to be at the whim of the editing room, which has a different set of goals in mind.
Mm-hmm.
So hats off to anybody who's gone ahead and done that. And I'm really excited about this haul.
Me too. Let's get into it.
So 2005 brought us something really iconic and important, and that was being Bobby Brown.
I remember this being on TV and being both fascinated and like kind of repelled, because I was like, these people are very chaotic to me, and I wasn't totally like down with the Chouse yet.
Mm-hmm.
But in retrospect, this is like an important documentary slice of life into one of the most like tragic downfalls of all time. This belongs in a museum. There should be like a screening of it somewhere.
It is all on YouTube for anybody who that you can watch for free.
Oh, thank
that
God.
They've ripped completely from the television. So it's complete with 2005 Bravo commercials and previews for other Bravo shows. So I highly recommend going down that route. And it's really interesting. It captures a time where Bobby is on trial for domestic abuse against Whitney, but Whitney wants to drop the charges, but they're trying to make an example of him in the court system. So
the state is prosecuting.
Mm-hmm.
Damn.
And so you get courtroom drama, traveling with Whitney Houston and eating meals with Whitney Houston. And just the hijinks that ensue from there. And her and Bobby's relationship is actually really sweet.
They're having a lot of fun.
They're having a blast.
But they're also very much on lots of drugs.
They're definitely coming up and down from something throughout the tenure of the show. But I it's rare, I think, now that we see something just sort of so... It didn't feel overly edited. It didn't really seem to like have much of a narrative that they were pushing. Like there wasn't really like an agenda. It felt very slice of life.
I think probably a lot of that was it due to Whitney and Bobby like not being able to follow any sort of agenda. I think it was like they got a show and it's like, oh my God, we're going to get to like follow Whitney Houston and Bobby Brown. And then like the cameras go up and they just realize like, they're like, oh my God, now we're like just following Whitney and Bobby Brown. And we like have to make something out of this. But like, they're clearly like too fucked up to adhere to kind of any traditional seasonal arc,
no,
if you will.
Instead, we just get them buying sunglasses and doing a dance about it in the store. It's just...
And don't they go to the Bahamas at one point? It's incredible. I would give it A+ because it goes above and beyond the darkness threshold, but it even is maybe almost too dark for me, specifically just because Bobby Christina is in it and you see like, you see her get like locked out of rooms that they're going into. And it's just like knowing what happens and what becomes of everyone. It's like, oh my God, we're like literally watching the reason why this person ended up dying later in life. So it's an A plus, but a proceed with caution.
It's definitely an A plus, and it's definitely...
It brought us duty bubbles.
Oh no. Yes, we do have that iconic moment where Bobby talks about pulling a duty from Whitney's butt, which I never...
You have to be in a pretty specific place to have a partner do that.
Thought about something like that. I'm glad that it was the bond of Whitney and Bobby that brought that into my brain.
Mm-hmm.
But it's something special not to be. I don't think it will ever, we'll never get anything done that way ever again.
Yeah, I just think that back in the early 2000s, especially, there were zero scruples about exploiting drug addiction for entertainment purposes, because that was kind of the era of celebrity rehab, Surreal Life, like
Anna Nicole,
bringing us to our even next show. Ugh. A true gem. I have chills thinking about this one. It's
the
so good
that it is pulling teeth to find any type of clips of the show in this moment is a true devastation for me. And we're talking about Hey Paula.
Hey Paula is one of the best reality shows ever filmed. And yes, this woman is literally high on painkillers most of the time and slurring her words, but she's also incredibly likable and funny. And it's camp.
It's beyond. So this was 2007. Paula is post-American Idol. She is doing her QVC thing. She's trying to get projects off the ground, and she has just cameras with her along the way. And I love Paula. She is so nice. My friend was her hairstylist. And the thing about, I think when you're at a certain level of celebrity that Paula's at, really the people that dress you, do your hair and makeup become your like inner circle people. So I've had some fun, wild times with Paula Abdul, and she was just always so nice. And the way I would watch her interact with people who would just come up to her, and truly, she couldn't walk 5 feet down the street without someone stopping her. And she would go out of her way to give everybody that came up to talk to her like a Paula moment.
Aww.
And I was like, this woman knows how to be a celebrity.
What a class act.
True class act. So sweet. I remember when I got fired from my job at CAA, I had like, we were at dinner that night and she ended up like sitting and talking. I was so upset and she was sitting and talking to me. She's like, I've been in this business since I was 17 years old. And she like explained to me like how fucked up like the agency world was and like, you know, how she's had so many ups and so many downs and she just keeps going. She gave me like a full pep talk, texted me the next day to be like, hope you're doing okay. Like, just, I love Paula.
I'm going to cry. Thoughtful queen.
Thoughtful queen. Just wow. So sweet. And like a true, she stays working. It's like, and it's talked about on the show. She's like, it's never been easy for her. She's always had to like really make it happen for herself. And she was really ahead of the curve when it came to like Bravo. She helped to build the network.
Love that Paula gave you that pep talk. I feel like that we owe Paula like a thank you, because who knows, without the Paula pep talk, you might not be here today.
Exactly.
So hats off to Paula Abdul. I'm sorry that people filmed you while you were going through something, but at least you got it taken off the internet. But just rest easy knowing that it's treasured amongst your fans. Like, everyone who loves Hey Paula is probably either a woman or a gay man. And they love it.
And they're dialed. Like, they get it.
Yeah. And they don't, like, it's not like a we look down on this person for having done this. It's truly like, thank God this person did this, because it gave us what we actually needed.
It's like there's two types of people in the world. Hey Paula fans and monsters. It's just so good. And my favorite scene, which is the iconic scene, is when she gets the email that the Bratz movie that she had been under the impression that she was going to be executive producing, choreographing, and I believe having a bit role in, she was no longer needed on the project.
We've all been there.
Newsboy cap on.
Low pony. Capri pants with like a pointy toed mid-calf boot. She was early 2000s style through and through. And she has like a bit of a meltdown.
She has a full meltdown. And then
it happens to the best of us.
/ fortunately for all us viewers, her assistants were talking in the other room while she was telling the camera about the Bratz project. And she says, she's trying to tell a story, so do they need to be quiet? It's the most Valerie Cherish thing.
It's incredible.
And it's so good, and it's just A plus all around. Paula, you're the best.
Mm-hmm.
I love her so much.
Thank you for being you.
Okay. Should we skip around a bit, or should we keep it in like an order?
We can skip a bit.
Okay. Anything calling your name?
Well, I just thought of something that we didn't have on the list.
Okay.
But did you watch this Princess's Long Island?
The thing about me is that I probably did, but I don't know if I like jog my memory a bit.
I only watched like the first episode and then I didn't circle back, but I've been meaning to for years because the real stands say that it is an instant classic. It's about a bunch of like Long Island Jewish girls who are still living at home and they're princesses.
Oh,
it's like Princesses of Long Island. Yeah, yep. I was going to say, it was like, I would be shocked if you said that you didn't watch this show.
Sure did.
So my friend Jake Shears had the theme song of the show was a Scissor Sisters song. So we like got together to watch the first episode and then I just like didn't revisit. But now it might be the time.
They could never make a show like this now. The synopsis for this show is as follows.
The show literally was like Japs.
Is as follows. Truly, it says Princesses, Long Island chronicles six young Jewish American princesses from the boomerang generation who reside at home. Which boomerang generation, isn't that if you like end up living back with your parents?
Yeah, I think they're like AKA millennials.
Right. Who reside at home with their parents in various communities on Long Island. It follows the group as they go out on the social scene, look for their future husbands, as well as the drama within the group. Cast member Chanel Omari says that in the premiere episode that when you're Jewish, live on Long Island, are 27, and are still living at home, it's time to panic.
Great premise. I'm gonna be watching that tonight.
I gotta find it. Oh, yeah. And Baby Come Home was the opening theme, one of my favorite Scissor Sister songs. Wow.
Yeah, it was keyed up to be a big hit. And then I don't think anyone watched it, or it was just like too messy. I remember it being like pretty messy and I was like, I can't take this on right now.
Wow, I need to find this back. And I am certainly intrigued.
The people are saying it's an A+.
Wow.
But I have to give it a TBD because I just can't speak to it and don't know, but needed to call it out for the haul.
Okay, so 2009 brought us NYC Prep.
Yeah, this was post Housewives, right?
Mm-hmm.
Bravo was like doing its thing, getting up and running, and then NYC Prep hit the TV screens.
I feel like it must have been spurred from the Gossip Girl popularity.
Yes. I swear I thought that's aired when I was living in Chicago, but maybe I was already in LA at this point because 2009 I would have been in LA. But I remember watching this and being like very cringed out and uncomfortable with these kids because I was like, they're incredibly embarrassing and annoying and I wasn't enjoying it. I was actually like getting bad secondhand embarrassment and I had to disengage.
I remember them really acting like adults. So they had like their charity events and shopping and fashion shows. And it was very like post Sex in the City world. Like here we are doing the Manhattan thing, but we're 15.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, this, I think probably a lot of NYC prep kids are being represented in this lawsuit because they were all minors.
Right. And how, I don't know that much about like a where are they now situation with any of them. That's maybe another conversation, but I can't imagine that this was helpful in their lives post one season of a reality show that they've done in high school.
No, I think doing a reality show like this in high school that's like following who you're dating and like what your peers are saying about you is social suicide. And that's why you should have to be like 18 years or older. You should really honestly be 21 or older to be on reality TV.
So there was this show on Hulu, maybe? PC was this guy who was kind of like the like Chuck Bass of the show.
Mm-hmm.
Peter Carey Peterson was his name. And he popped up back in the zeitgeist because he got married to another social New York City socialite named Quentin Esme Brown. And Tiffany Trump was the flower girl at this seemingly spur of the moment wedding. But then I was watching this documentary about scammers.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, how? They were interviewing this Quentin woman. And I was like, how does this woman look so familiar? How do I know who she is? And she was scammed by Swiffer Girl. But I recognized her because I had like gone into a PC from New York City prep rabbit hole and like followed that those nuptials. And then they got a divorce, but then she popped up in this Danielle Miller scammer mini doc thing.
Wow.
So
the twisted web they weave.
And that's now. So their PC's still popping in.
Still in the mix.
Yeah.
I give NYC prep, like, I have to give it a B+ just because I'm like, kids are interesting and it is a fun slice of life to watch, but it doesn't scratch my itch, which really is, I think, mostly like secret addicts and like messy adults.
Yeah, I just loved the trend of finding a popular scripted show and then moving it into a reality format, which Bravo did a beautiful job of. Obviously, thank you to the Housewives franchise for their Desperate Housewives nod. But New York City Prep, I think I'm grading these on like, would I watch it again if it was the opportunity was presented to me? And that's a yes. Mm-hmm. I would probably like take on like a reorganizing project and have that on in the background and feel great
about it. It's a
perfect
background show.
So I'll give it a B.
Okay. I am also just now being reminded of another classic one season Bravo show, Real Housewives of DC.
Oh, so good.
This show is one of the best Real Housewives franchises that ever happened, and I'm unclear on how it got canceled after one season. I blame the Salahis.
I dressed up as White House party crashers one year for Halloween. I wore a red sari and my friend's boyfriend wore a suit. And we were the Salahis, and
that's a great costume.
Anybody take it and do it this year.
I really miss them. Didn't Michaela Salahi, was her name Michaela or Mikhail? Didn't she have a single for a while?
She had a single, and then she left her husband for someone in like the Eagles or something like that.
Work.
Yeah. And the fact that the cameras were present for the whole White House crasher scandal, that was niche.
This was Obama's America when anything could happen.
It was so good.
People were just being exploited left and right. They were sneaking into the White House. It was more of a lull.
I feel like our society is like too contentious now around politics to ever be able to do another DC again.
I think it would be really interesting to do a DC and stunt cast the fuck out of it. But the thing is like, I like to watch people that don't share my values on television.
Same.
That's fun for me.
Me too.
Like, I usually try and seek that out because I am entertained. So I don't understand people that like only want to see their values reflected back to them when it comes to like reality TV programming. I'm like, where's the tension in that?
Right. I mean, people were so pressed when they uncovered that Aaron from this new season of Roni had donated to Trump. And I just am like, okay, but like, I like her on the show.
Yeah. Also, get over it.
That too.
Get over it.
It's just sort of like a weird zone to play in because I think, yeah, it's just like, what are they there for? Are they here to like set an example for how to like step into the world politically? Or are they here to like give us a fun hour?
Yeah, I think that the best kind of reality TV has a lot of friction built into mm-hmm. it. And so I look forward to like watching that play out. And like, I like when people think differently than
right.
me.
And I will say some of my most favorite of all time Housewives scenes have been political. Like, for example, Dorinda's Hillary election night party, or I'm sorry, it was Carol's Hillary election night party. That's like a very intense episode. Mm-hmm. And it's just, we all remember that experience. And so I loved that we got to experience that through Housewives. Another one that I just recently touched on in my BH rewatch is that when Rinna and Camille have a huge fight at the dinner table about Kavanaugh, like it was amazing television.
I have to say too, I think most of my most treasured housewives are Republicans.
Of course.
The Republicans make better housewives than Democrats. I'm gonna say that. And I said what I said. I'm thinking of Vicki Gumbelson, all the ladies of the OC.
All the ladies of the OC.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of them maybe just keep it closer to the chest than...
Well, now you kind of have to, because if people get like too wild... That's another thing, is like what ruins the reality TV experience is like letting the fans inform what a show is going to be or yep. who's going to be on the show. I think that's like such a huge mistake. I just believe that when it comes to like creativity, you give people what they don't know they need.
Right. I don't like how in recent years fans have become casting director and they're like, fire this person, don't renew this person's contract, this and that. It's like, and I think Bravo has done a disservice by listening to that.
They absolutely have.
Like, I'm nervous about a Rinna-less BH.
Yeah, that's gonna suck. Lover or hater, she stirred the pot. And that's what you need. In this day and age, the pot must be stirred. So, DC Housewives.
A. Yeah. Okay, Kel on Earth.
Kel on Earth is like the Bible for some people. It's a must read and a must engage. And like, I think it informed also, like, Kelly taught me how to like be a worker.
Oh yeah. Kelly Catrone. So she first really hit the popular culture zeitgeist via The Hills when her PR firm, People's Revolution, hired Whitney as a PR person, and then LC came in as an intern, and then Stephanie Pratt came in as an intern, and it was really used as a vehicle for like the workplace comedy that ensued. And Kelly was such a star. Just out the gate, quintessential PR boss in a way that Sam Jones could never. Sorry.
She was a true one of the first girl bosses to be shown on reality television.
Kelly Catrone's book, If You Have to Cry, Go Outside.
That was a Bible. Essential reading, yes.
It's so good. And she also has had such an interesting life and career. She used to literally do tarot readings on Venice Beach.
Queen.
And like such a model up to me of like, you can make it happen for yourself. And cut to Kel on Earth, which was like a no holds bar look inside fashion PR in New York City.
It made me excited about, like, I was already excited about fashion, but I loved getting this, like, inside look. I was, like, it felt like a VIP look behind the scenes at, like, how these big fashion shows get put together. I feel like the people, Kelly was really chic. She associated with, like, chic designers. Her assistant Andrew Muckamal now styles Margot Robbie, did all of Margot Robbie's styling for the Barbie press tour.
I knew I recognized his name. Mm-hmm.
He's like a big time stylist now. And so Kelly like was the kind of person that would groom people in a good way to like come up into their own thing.
Robin, do you remember her? She was
kind of, I need to rewatch Kel on Earth really
badly. Kelly's right-hand man. She founded the workout label Live the Process.
Wow.
Right?
Rock stars only.
Only. So this is so random, but I met Kelly one time.
Huge.
Huge. And Robin, when they were doing a People's Rev party at the Roosevelt.
Mm-hmm.
And the Hills were filming there as well.
The Roosevelt used to be the spot.
Truly the spot. And I was talking to Robin and she's like really nice. And I was like, I am such a Kelly fan. She's like, do you want to meet her? And I was like, yeah. And I had like a really nice moment with the both of them and they were delightful.
I walked by Kelly once in New York and she was like wearing a caftan and just like talking to someone. And I was like, there she goes. She's on the move. Just like always working. What a woman.
Kel on Earth.
Yeah.
A plus. It's also, you have to pay if you want to watch any of Kel on Earth.
I'll pay.
I know, but I just want them on the streamers. For a second, I feel like they were all on Peacock or the Bravo app and it's all gone.
I feel like Peacock's about to get taken out. I feel like the powers that be are jealous haters of Peacock.
Well, here's what. I think if the, according to TMZ, if these reality stars have their way, Peacock's on its way out and it's just going to be sports. I know.
That is like, for one moment, we had Camelot vibes.
I know. Okay.
Oh, wait. Okay. So I just remembered another show, which I was trying to figure out the name of, but I referenced that Wikipedia list that you sent me. I had a friend on this show, Tabloid Wars. It was a very early aughts Bravo show, one season wonder. It aired from like July 24th to August 21st, 2006.
Oh, that's a quick.
It was
a blink and you miss it.
Flash in the pan. Yeah. It was a reality television series filmed in mid-2005. The show chronicles the working lives of journalists from the New York Daily News.
I do remember this one.
You remember
one.
This?
Yes.
I remember watching it when I lived in Chicago. I can't remember like really what it was about, but now one of my good friends like used to be on that show and I always am like, you need to do a screening of your reality show just for friends only, just so we can all lol, but he won't do it yet. But one day I hope that he will.
Yeah, that
around.
Needs to happen. This wasn't a one season one, but do you remember that show Blowout with Jonathan Anton?
Mm-hmm.
My friend Kiara, who was Paula Abdul's hair person years before that, was one of the characters on Blowout. She was like the extension person with the colored hair, if you remember.
Blowout's so long ago, but I do think I watched that one.
I love Blowout. I loved Jackie's Gym, the workout show, whatever that one was. That was, all of those were my fave. And it was really funny because when I first moved to LA in my early 20s, pretty much at one time, me and all of my friends had all like been at least on one episode of one random Bravo reality show. Like my friend worked at a design store in La Cienega and like Jeff Lewis had come in, or like working for Rachel Zoe. It was like I did digital, so there was nothing to be seen there. Like I was literally at my desk the whole time, but I'd always just like be in the corner and just funny stuff like that. So like just the Bravo reality shows mid-aughts were just like, ugh, nothing better.
Man, if reality TV people unionized, I might be in that union because I've had one speaking line on Vanderpump Rules.
Didn't you?
And I do want my royalties for
that. That's right. And you know what? I'll take some Rachel Zoe Project royalties as well.
Yeah, I literally ate Lisa's horrible pasta and I said it was delicious. I sold it for her.
Was it bad, really?
It was bad, yeah. It was like a bad vegan pasta at Tom Tom. It was just on the do not order list of mine at Tom Tom. But yeah, maybe I would be union strong right now. Interesting.
It's just really something to think about.
Yeah. So Tabloid Wars, I don't know if anyone knows that show or if you have access to that show somehow, hook us up.
Please send
me. Because I would love to like trigger my friend's like PTSD from this and like spring it on him.
Okay.
Sometime.
So one show that is available on Peacock in its entirety at this very moment, Run Don't Walk, is Bethany Getting Married, which was Bethany's spinoff show from Roni. When she met Jason Hoppe, she got pregnant. They got engaged. She had decided that she was leaving Roni and that she then got offered her own show, documented said pregnancy and wedding planning. Thus, we have Bethany Getting Married. And it's not really that good. Like, it's okay.
But it was compelling at the time.
It was compelling, but what it did give us is, so we had one season of Bethany Getting Married, obviously, because she got married. But then we got two seasons of Bethany Ever After from Bethany Getting Married. And Bethany Ever After is in my top five favorite reality shows of all time.
Wow. Okay.
Because what we see happen in Bethany Ever After is Bethany is a newlywed, new mom, and she sells Skinny Girl for millions and millions of dollars, and her life changes literally overnight. And to capture that on film and to watch somebody who's clearly really worked so hard their whole life to be at 40 years old and suddenly is like, money is no longer an object to me. Things are just about to completely change in my life. It's just so fascinating. And then you just watch the complete dissolution of her relationship to her husband. And so just like those things combined, chef's kiss, A plus, amazing. However, Bethany Getting Married, yeah.
I remember her wedding well because she like put a platform over that Four Seasons like fountain.
Mm-hmm.
And that always just like is on my mind a lot. For some reason, I'm like, I often go back to just like that visual. I need to revisit Bethany Ever After.
Yes, it's a must. It's on Peacock now. Run, don't walk, because who knows how much longer we'll have access to that.
Bethany has her way. That shit will get taken
right,
the fuck down.
Truly. So it's phenomenal. I'm going to give Bethany Getting Married a B only because it gave us the next two seasons of her other show. But the B is for, I got to do it. It's even better to be real.
Yeah. I'm going to give it a C plus. First, see it and then watch
the other
Bethany
one.
Get it ever after.
Yeah.
We could not do this list without honoring the one, the only Gallery Girls.
Wow. This one, I think of all these one season ones, has the most chatter about Gone Too Soon.
Mm-hmm. We can all agree. I think this was also, this was right around the time when Girls premiered. So it was similar in tone. I think it was like trying to achieve a similarity to Girls. And it was about five art world fools who were young millennial, like in their 20s, living in New York and Brooklyn, and like following them as they try and break into the art world. And it is endearing, deeply embarrassing, cringe, dark, but like also very like everyone's in their 20s. It's like it has it all. And if you watch it, which you should, you need to also listen to the Sexy Unique podcast companion piece, Gallery Ghouls, because we recapped that show, Carrie and I did like years ago. I want to say like in 2019.
You're cool for that.
Yeah, I've always been a Gallery Girls stan. It really informed like around the time, like a lot of my inspiration was from like Bravo personalities and Bravo celebrities. And it really was like during White Girl Problems era, a real like inspirational touchstone for me.
I remember watching Gallery Girls, but for some, because I've watched it all, guys. I watched Summer Camp. So I like really, I've seen Bravo presents it, I'll at least give it a one episode try. But for some reason, my brain didn't file away many facts about the show. But I remember loving it. And I would have loved to revisit it prior to this year haul. But I wasn't able to access any episodes.
It's not on Peacock?
No.
It was, though.
I know.
Guys,
something's amiss.
Dire straits. It's an A+. You have to see it. Words can't do it justice.
I'm giving it an anticipatory A because I do really want to revisit and give it a full watch with all of my intention.
Let's move on to a real sad affair. Jax and Brittany take Kentucky.
Whew. They really tried that.
This was
a mess.
Difficult. Not in a good way. So crazy to me too that this like didn't hit in a way that they thought it would and what it had potential to do, because it's like it was fresh off the heels of season 6, right? Mm-hmm. So he had already cheated on Brittany with Faith and they got back together, or was this before that?
When did they get married? Were they already married when they did Jax and Brittany take?
No, because I think that was like a big thing.
Oh, right.
On Jax and Brittany was right. Like, are you going to make like an honest woman out of this?
Correct.
Southern Belle.
So it was giving like a simple life energy. It was like Jax and Brittany, big city boy, and Brittany go back to her hometown to do chores on the farm.
Which is like too much of a concept for these. I mean, you truly, the kinds of people that they cast on Vanderpump Rules are like, they're like inefficient human beings who like can't wrap their minds around what this is supposed to be. So a better concept would have just been like Jax and Brittany.
Right.
And just follow them around. And the mundanity of their day-to-day lives is far more compelling than like trying to put them in a situation and have them make comedy out of it.
An experiment such as this show just proves to me how much of an ensemble cast Vanderpump is. Mm-hmm. Because Jax and Brittany together doing something doesn't hold my attention.
No, and it was also just like really twisted, because then at the end you're like, God, this relationship is cursed. Like, this man is so disrespectful to this woman, and it's just like, this is awful and not fun to watch in like a dark way, just like boring and schlocky and bad. I give it a D+.
I'm giving it just a straight D. I love your kindness with the plus, but it was so bad and I believe I couldn't even finish it.
The plus was for Mama.
I was just going to say, one star was Mama.
RIP to Mama's beer cheese, a business that never quite got off the ground.
That was gonna be at the farmer's markets around LA. Mm-hmm. LOL. So I'm really curious, since you're the resident professor for the VPR universe here on Two Niche, thoughts on the VPR spinoff that's in development starring Jax, Kristen Doughty, and I think Brittany and Lala. And then I saw deep, deep in the depths of a Vanderpump Rules Reddit page that there was other casting announced, and it was a bunch of random people who I have no idea who they are and I don't think I care.
Yeah, I always have hope for something like this. I think Doughty back on our screens, like the one saving grace is that like Doughty is dating her podcast co-host.
And it was named as one of the cast members.
Yeah,
from what I saw.
And like, I just thought, because they started this podcast together and then weeks later came out as dating. And I just think that is like
story.
Kiss of death for a relationship, romantic relationship. Like, and I think that Doughty will always serve, like she belongs on reality TV. There's nothing else that this woman can do.
And I really appreciate, from what I gathered from her Watch What Happens Live appearance, like the growth that she's experienced from season 2 Suck a Dick to now, in her like that earth mama like meditation slay moment. Like I
think you might be able to give her a little attention and watch a fun backslide happen, which is what I deep down hope for. I want.
And this is why they're suing.
I know. And like, I'm really glad that I never was a executive like at any sort of reality TV. Like because I would literally be getting sued right now. I'm like, we want your most mentally unstable, alcoholic, drug addicts, line them all up and we're going to cast them in various.
Well, that's the name of the game. But yeah. Even look at, I don't know if you pay attention to this, but I'm really fascinated with all of the hate around America's Next Top Model that's bubbled up over the past few years.
That's a true get over it. That show was formative and like that changed the game. And don't ever come for Tyra. It's, do not.
There's a whole underbelly of people who are like calling the show out on the regular. It's like it already happened.
I know. Like, what's the point of that? You're like, be grateful that you get
amazing.
To experience these clips. That's some of the best television of all time.
And now, because it is so seemingly problematic, it's even more fun.
Mm-hmm. It was fun then, even more fun now. Yeah.
Add a whole new layer.
I have hope that like if people are doing their jobs correctly, this spinoff has promise. But I also hold space for the fact that no one wants to get off their asses and work anymore. And everyone wants to have like a lot of respect for these flops boundaries. So I know that there's a possibility that this will also just become propaganda. It remains to be seen,
it's
but
TBD.
There will be one person watching and that's me. And I'll probably be talking about yeah. it on set.
Watch the space here.
Side note, I covered the whole season of Jackson Brittany Take Kentucky with Ryan O'Connell, which is like one of the first, that's like the time that I believe I launched the Sup Patreon with that show specifically.
Wow. So, how was that having to commit to talking about it?
It was tough. Ryan was losing a lot of steam. He really realized that he committed to something he didn't want to see through. We worked through it, but it ended up, the show ended up being great.
And it was
like,
what? It was
so
like
fun to podcast
six
with.
Episodes?
It was six episodes. Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. I feel like this is a really good place to end today's haul.
Yeah.
We started at a place of being Bobby Brown and we ended at a Jackson Brittany take and...
Can we have one more?
Oh.
I feel like there's just one more that I want to shout out.
Absolutely.
Euros of Hollywood.
Oh, that's right.
Euros of Hollywood, a one season wonder following a bunch of European people that, you guessed it, live in Hollywood and their lives that you've never heard of. You're like, literally, who are these people? But they are celebrities in their own right. And it was interesting because it's like, it's a bunch of Euros living in Hollywood.
I love when the title says it all.
You know, there's a swath of like European energy in LA. Mm-hmm. And if you're not a Euro of Hollywood, you're not in the Euro group.
No, but if you want to catch a vibe of the Euros in Hollywood, go to the Earth Cafe on Melrose.
Yeah. And if you want to be dead center in the Russians of Hollywood, you can go move into my old apartment on Ogden Drive. But yeah, Euros of Hollywood, I would give it a B+. It's like a true, if you're just kind of bored, but you need to see something that you haven't seen before and then get a sense of like this whole other subculture that exists.
And 2014 LA, what a time to celebrate and remember.
Yeah, it was the best of times.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay, I would watch that. I don't remember it. I need to see like I can't even find a photo really to jog my memory, but I'm really open to checking that one out.
Yeah, I don't know if it's available anywhere, but it did feature an Albanian pop star named Bliona, who you've probably never heard of, but she was everything.
All right. I'm listening.
But yeah.
Wonderful. What a haul.
What a haul. Let us know what we missed.
Definitely would love to hear about what we missed in your eyes, as well as what's your fave. Gotta know.
Mm-hmm.
What are your niche fave one season Bravo shows? And I think there's a world where we expand past Bravo for a continuation of this theme.
Definitely.
In another hall.
100.
All right, everybody. Thank you so much for listening.
And until next time.
Stay niche.
Bye.
Ah. Too Niche is created and hosted by Laura Marie Shainhalls and me, Elizabeth Cott.
Today's episode was edited by AJ Mosley. If you love today's episode, please give us a 5-star A+ rating in Spotify, Apple, or wherever you get your podcast audio. And be sure to subscribe so that you never miss an episode. And be sure to smash the follow on Instagram and TikTok at @this_is_too_niche.
One of my favorite big ticket investment items is from Higher Dose. From infrared sauna blankets to PEMF mats, their science-backed tech helps you sweat and recharge and glow like never before. I am such a fan. I truly lie on my PEMF mat every night. I also love my sauna blanket. They are just incredible items. And because you're a Too Niche listener, you get 15% off your order with code NICHE15 at checkout. So head over to higherdose.com, use code NICHE15, and elevate your wellness routine today.